Hello and welcome to Simply Save, Money Control's weekly personal finance podcast where we discuss all things money. Now, the due date to file income tax returns for the financial year 2022-23, that is assessment year 23-24, is less than 2 weeks away. So if you have not completed the process already, you simply have no time to lose. So do not put it off until the last minute. This will help you steer clear of some common mistakes that taxpayers tend to make every year. So, while some errors such as entering incorrect bank account details in the income tax return forms could lead to a delay in crediting tax refunds, missing out on reporting, for example, capital gains made on sale of stocks or mutual fund units could result in a notice from the income tax department. To know more about the mistakes that could land you in a soup, we have with us today Mayank Mohanka, partner SM Mohanka & Associates. Welcome to the show, Mr. Mohanka. It's great to have you on Simply Save for the first time.
Yeah, pleasure is all mine.
Thank you. Now is the time when a lot of people will start filing returns, although they had a lot of time on hand. Just about 14 days to go, and there is every chance that in a hurry, many people would commit mistakes. So could you talk about the typical or common mistakes that you've seen taxpayers making every year?
Yes, Preeti, this is a very well-timed and pertinent question. And especially today itself, the Honorable Revenue Secretary has clarified that probably there will not be any extensions as far as the individuals and IHUS returns filing time period is concerned, and 31st July will remain the due date.
Right.
So yes, only 14 days are left, and obviously, sometimes in panic and sometimes due to time constraint, some genuine mistakes or some otherwise innocent looking mistakes may also be committed. And the first common mistake which I have experienced is that the person is otherwise required to file a return, but some bona fide misbelief or misunderstanding, the person does not file his or her return. Say, for instance, there is a common understanding that the return needs to be filed only when the basic threshold exemption limit is crossed or breached, and which is 2.5 lakhs in both the regimes for the current financial year 22-23. So, but how that basic threshold cutoff is to be determined, that is the basic question. Say, for instance, I am an individual and I am having some interest income on FDs, my bank FDs, of 4 lakh rupees in a year. And I make some investments under Section 80C, suppose ELSS investments of 1.5 lakhs. So my net income will be 2.5 lakhs. And on that, believe that my net income is 2.5 lakhs, I don't file a return. So this is a mistake, and I will definitely get a notice of non-filing of return, because the correct position was that I need to file my return, which is 4 lakh rupees. Then I need to claim the 80C deduction of 1.5 lakhs. And then obviously, the tax will not be required to be paid, but return needs to be filed here. So okay, this is one common mistake of non-filing of return. Then also, even if the sometimes it may so happen that there is no taxable income, even if the gross total income is below the basic threshold exemption limit, but there is one specified provision in the Income Tax Act which has listed down some 4 or 6 special criterias which require the person to file the return even if the one's income is below the threshold income.
Okay.
So first such criteria is that if your electricity bill is in excess of rupees 1 lakh in a year, then even if your no taxable income is there, but then you are supposed to file your return. And the second such criteria is that your foreign travel expense exceeds 2 lakhs in a year. So then also you are supposed to file your return. Then there are similar criterias of your making deposits of 50 lakhs or more in your saving bank account, or 1 crore or more in your current account. So such other specified criterias are also there, which needs to be adhered to while filing the returns. Now also, the second basic thing is that choosing the wrong ITR form itself. This is also a very common thing, because currently for individuals and HUFs, there are 4 ITR forms, prescribed ITR forms, ITR 1, 2, 3 and 4. And there are specified conditions prescribed for eligibility criteria for each form. And ITR 1 is for those individuals and HUFs who are having their salary income from one house property, and income from other sources, which mainly includes your interest income on FD, up to a limit of 50 lakhs only. So ITR 1 can be filed by those persons. Then for those persons who are having capital gain incomes in other than your salary income and your house property income, or are having more than one house property income and incomes in excess, total income in excess of 50 lakh rupees, then they are required to file ITR 2 and not ITR 1. And one's very nitty-gritty is there that even if one is otherwise may file ITR 1, but if the person is a director in an Indian company during the year, or if the person holds any unlisted equity investments in an Indian company during the year, then even if the person is having his or her income less than 50 lakhs, then ITR 1 will not be applicable, then ITR 2 will only be need to be filed. And similarly, ITR 3 is for your business income or professional income, and ITR 4 is for presumptive taxation income. So the understanding needs to be very clear that which ITR form needs to be filed. Otherwise, in the income tax portal, it is a very user-friendly portal, and the understanding is very clear that the assessee, when it tries to file his or her return, then it very clearly prompts the assessee ki whether which form will be applicable to the assessee. So this is thing. Now coming to some other more fundamental things, and that may be one thing is that there is an option of filing the opting for two regimes, that is the old regime with higher tax rates but with all specified deductions of ATC and other deductions, your HRA, your home loan interest, and or the new regime with reduced personal tax rates but with no specified deductions. So in those persons who are carrying on any business or profession during the financial year 2022-23, and if they are opting for the new regime, then it is compulsory for them to first file a declaration form in 10IE before the due date of filing their ITR, which is 31st July. So if they don't file this declaration form 10IE before filing their return, then it will be assumed that their return has been filed as per the old regime. And suppose the new tax regime is more beneficial to them as per their calculations, then also the differential tax demand may come up if they have made that calculations based on their understanding of the new regime. So this is also a common mistake. Then another thing is that if somebody is holding any foreign assets, if any Indian is holding any foreign assets, say your ESOPs or your stock options or any other equity, foreign equity share listed on a foreign exchange, even for a single day, if one is holding that, then that person is required to file a return, even if the person is not having any taxable income. And most importantly, then the disclosure also needs to be there in a separate schedule, FA, the foreign asset schedule. So most likely in recent times, I have come across many cases where out of ignorance or misunderstanding, the persons, thus mostly the salaried employees, where those who have obtained ESOPs of the foreign parent company may have not disclosed the same in the foreign asset schedule, and therefore they have received the notices. So this non-disclosure is again a very big
Something
mistake.
that can attract a notice from.
Yeah, definitely it will attract a notice. Yeah. Then another important thing is that with effect from financial year 22-23 itself, this any gain arising on your crypto transactions, your bitcoins and your all virtual digital assets, there is a separate schedule, VDA, has been inserted, and this has to be reported. All the transactions and the gains or the loss arising on it has to be reported, and the non-reporting or the non-disclosure of the same will all again trigger the notice.
Notice.
So these are the some mistakes, common mistakes, which I can think of right now. So, and one another, I should add one more here. That is that suppose a person is carrying on a business but does not furnish the balance sheet schedule or the profit and loss schedule in its ITR form, then if that person is having an income, business income of more than 1.2 lakhs, 1,20,000 rupees in a year, or the gross turnover from the business in any of the three preceding years is 10 lakhs or more, but even then he does not maintain his books of accounts and does not fill the balance sheet and the profit and loss, then also he will definitely get a notice from the income tax department just stating that you have not maintained the books of accounts, you have not filled the schedule. So he will re need
Okay.
to revise the return.
Okay.
So these are the common mistakes.
And you spoke about the new rules that will come into effect relating to crypto gains from this year. So any particular points that people should bear in mind while reporting crypto gains in ITR forms?
Yes. This is again a very relevant question. Since this is the first year,
Right.
obviously the reporting requirement has to be especially carefully analyzed and the full disclosure needs to be there. Firstly, the ITR Form 1 and in ITR Form 4 are not eligible to report the crypto income. So the crypto income has to be reported either in ITR Form 2 or ITR Form 3.
Okay.
And the second aspect is that the Finance Act has specified that this crypto income can be reported either as a capital gain under the head capital gain or as business income, depending upon the choice of the SSC. So since this is the first year, the choice needs to be carefully made. And suppose I am an SSC and I have made some crypto gains and I choose it as a capital gain transaction, then I need to file ITR 2 because ITR 2 pertains to our capital gain income. And if I choose to report it as my business income, then it will be then I will need to report it in ITR 3, even if I am not having any other business income, but I since I have chosen to treat it as my business income, then I will be required to report it in ITR 3. Thirdly, no loss whatsoever, no deduction whatsoever will be available to me against this crypto gain. Suppose I have earned some gain on trading of Bitcoin, but and I have incurred some losses on other shares. Sorry, the other way around. If I have incurred some losses in crypto transactions, I have incurred some gains in some other transactions, be it your long-term capital gain or any other transactions, then this loss from crypto transactions will not be offset, cannot be offset against any other income. Neither, and also from the income of the crypto itself, no loss other than your cost of acquisition. Just only cost of acquisition is allowable. No other deduction or allowance is allowed in the crypto because of the new section 115 BBH. So this schedule VDA needs to be filed, and in this schedule VDA requires some specific disclosures and reporting requirements, which are the date of acquisition of the crypto, the transfer date, the values of acquisition as well as the transfer. And even if one has received a gift, a crypto as a gift, then also the 56.27B fair market value provisions come into picture. So that can also be taxed. So these are the basic reporting requirements of crypto.
Okay, so let's say I am a professional who's been using ITR for all these years until last year. And this year, only in 22-23, I dabbled in crypto transactions. Then I should file ITR 3, right? Then I should be using ITR 3.
Very true, very
Okay.
true. You need to file ITR 3.
Okay. And what about losses in crypto if I book a loss on one crypto instrument, can that be set off against another crypto? Correct.
No,
Okay,
that can also not be. Yes, you have rightly pointed out that a loss from Bitcoin cannot be offset against your profit from Ethereum and
Okay.
vice versa. Yeah.
All right. Okay. And again, going back to the earlier point that you made on reporting of foreign income stocks and ESOP holdings. So again, here, how do they go about reporting this income? Any particular mistakes that they should avoid?
Yes, as I have pointed out, that firstly, the holding of such any foreign asset will be required to be disclosed in a separate schedule, that is FA, Foreign Asset Schedule. And this ESOPs, holding of ESOPs or any other foreign stocks will be required to be disclosed there. Then again, there is a table, specific table containing some six or seven particulars which needs to be filed. Your date of acquisition, your carrying value, your highest value during the year, your closing value, and all such kind of things. So those are factual details which need to be filed on based on case to case basis. Here also there are two or three specific points which we should remember. Firstly, that suppose in case of ESOPs, the difference between the exercise price and the current market price of the share is treated as your taxable as perquisite income in the hands of employees. And obviously the Indian company will in any case include that perquisite value in your Form 16 and 12BA form. So the taxation aspect in most of the cases will be automatically taken care by the because the employee com employer company is required to deduct the TDS. So the taxation aspect obviously comes into Form 16 automatically is taken care in the return. But the disclosure part, these notices which have come up was on account of non-disclosure. And one another gray area, which is that in case, especially in case of restricted stock units, RSUs, which are very kind of ESOPs only. So where the cash settlements are being done. So in those cases, what is being done is that the foreign company is required to withhold tax on behalf of the employees, Indian employees. So obviously no company will pay that withholding tax from its own pocket. So suppose I am an employee and I have exercised my right of for 100 ESOPs, but out of 100 ESOPs, 30 ESOPs are being utilized by the company in discharging my withholding tax liability in India. And only 70 is credited to my account. Net amount is 70. So for the 30, the treatment which is generally being done by the company is that they sell off that, they show it as that as if the shares have been sold off at the same price of the acquisition cost on the same day itself. So therefore no capital gain will arise effectively. But nonetheless, the disclosure as the treatment, their treatment as selling of these 30 shares will be reported in their FATCA reports if they are belong to USA. So sometimes these specific notices have come up because the employees out of bona fide reasons have disclosed only 70 shares, whereas they have been allotted 100 shares. So the correct treatment would have been to report all the 100 shares, then 30 shown as sold because there is one particular column of sold during the year. And they can also mention that no capital gain has been arisen because the acquisition cost and the transfer cost is the same. But nonetheless, the reporting needs to be there that the gross value was 100, 30 sold, and the remaining amount is 70. So this is the correct way of disclosure and treatment. And one last important from my side that suppose the financial year is 22-23. It starts from 1st April 2022 and ends on 31st March 2023. So for this period, whether the foreign holdings needs to be reported or for other period, because there may be cases that the our financial year may not reconcile coincide with the calendar year of other foreign entities, which foreign countries. But this has also been clarified in a very clear manner now, because in these ITR forms for this financial year 22-23, they have mentioned that the calendar year financial the those foreign holdings which an Indian is holding from 1st of January 2021 to 31st December 2022. So those foreign holdings will need to be reported in this particular previous year, that is financial year 22-23.
And is there any will they receive notices even if the amounts are really small, say less than rupees 5 lakh or really small amounts? Even such if the transaction value or the value of shares that they hold, ESOPs that they hold, is less than 5 lakh or any particular threshold, will they still receive notices?
It cannot be generalized whether they will receive notices, but yes, in the Black Money Act, the threshold limit is 5 lakhs.
It's 5 lakh.
So it can be considered as a threshold limit for triggering of notices and escalation.
Got it. And also now, especially ever since AIS has been introduced, in fact, and it is reflecting more and more transactions over the last 2 years. So with the introduction of AIS, it has become tougher for everybody to either deliberately or even otherwise conceal income, right? Even I could I will not miss reporting any income because I don't remember, because I can always go to AIS and check first. So in that case, could you explain the importance of verifying AIS and also Form 26AS to avoid missing reporting any income?
Yes, very rightly pointed out, Preeti ji. Because AIS, obviously, AIS and the currently the AIS system has become so advanced with artificial intelligence and their insight portal that nothing can remain unconcealed or hide it. Because each and everything, suppose you're even if you are earning any dividend income, if you are earning any interest income, if you are doing any even debit credit card transactions, if you are having any cash deposits, if you are making any foreign trip, if you are purchasing any car in excess of the specified limit, if you are purchasing share capital, if you are subscribing to any share capital, then all these transactions, if you are purchasing an immovable property, all these transactions are automatically reported by the respective reporting financial institutions, that is the under the AIS phenomena. So obviously there is no scope whatsoever, and one cannot even afford to conceal anything, forget about afford to misreporting, forget about concealing. So but nonetheless, the practical scenarios is this has other side also, because practically I have seen in real life that suppose a person is a seller, I am a seller, I have sold one property, but and there are four co-owners of purchasers of that property. So by as per rule, the total value they will equal, they will one
Divide
deduct
the
1%
mixes.
TDS. But in my pan, but in AIS what is coming is that one transaction is being replicated four times, because all of them are reporting the same transaction in my pan. So my suppose my transaction is only 50 lakhs, but that transaction because of replication of four times has become 2 crores. So that was the problem, but now a solution has come up. The department is encouraging in fact, before filing the returns, it is very essential to go through the AIS. One can easily assess the AIS in the income while logging into the registered e-filing account only. They have made a tab also. And by looking at the AIS, by going through the AIS, they are also giving a window to rectify or to submit your response, whether you are in agreement with the financial transaction being reported in AIS or you want to change that response. So there are some drop-down list also that PAN number is not mine, that is not my transaction, or the amount is double or not relating to not the exact amount. So it is in our best interest only before filing the returns to verify the AIS and to rectify it if in case of any discrepancies. So that later on, we don't come across any notices which otherwise should not have been come up to us.
All right, then thanks a lot for this valuable information, Mr. Mahankal. Thanks a lot, and it was once again a pleasure to have you on our show. The session was really informative. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Preeti ji. Thanks a lot.
And with that, it's a wrap on this edition of Simply Save. For more news, views, and updates, do stay logged on to moneycontrol.com.